An editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, our Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And you know, that's very true when you're dealing with the bank and the government and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper over gold. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin without a good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin is absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us, you and I, to establish our property rights. Well, Congress, back in 1933, and our politicians didn't take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well, that in order to establish the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property, that they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin. And they did. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, our duties and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, and that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. And if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. Remember, it's free of charge. It's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational. And best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is available, remember, on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Now, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this thing called privacy. Can you have privacy in the electronic age? That's the question that was first posed back in 1982 in an article published in U.S. News and World Report. Their conclusion was, we don't think so. Well, I'm a law school teacher, and I'm not complaining about any loss of privacy in the computer age. I don't know of any government officials, you know, people like President Bush. I mean, this guy, President Bush, and most politicians live in a fishbowl. They're on the 6 o'clock news every night being interviewed, you know, by Jim Lehrer. They're being interviewed by some reporter with CBS or somebody else. But if you ask yourself, what do you really know about these people? The answer is you don't know jack squat about any of them. Think about it for a minute. You don't know anything about George Bush. You don't know anything about his private life. So those of us that are in public life, those of us that are on radio or television or we're in movies or, you know, whatever this guy is doing, there's a public persona that we want to get out to the public because we want to sell our ideas or sell our movies or sell our political agenda or philosophies. And then there's the private side. Now, we got a sheriff here in our county. I don't know jack squat about the sheriff. I know other than what I read about him in the paper. Now, people in the county, if you went and asked them, do you know Sheriff Pace? Oh, yeah, I know Sheriff Pace. You know, it's almost like he's their next-door neighbor, you know. No, there isn't anybody in this county knows anything about Sheriff Pace. Other than the sheriff's wife, I imagine she knows a little something about him that the rest of us don't know. But the rest of us really don't know very much about Sheriff Pace. I don't know where he banks. I don't know how much money he's got in the bank. I know how much money he makes, though. Well, I know how much money he makes in his sheriff's job because they publish that. See, that's public information. How much money does this guy make every year? I don't know. I know how much he gets paid by the county for being the sheriff. That's published. I know how much money George Bush makes for being president of the United States, but I don't know what his secret Swiss bank account is or how much money he's got in there, and neither do you, and neither does anybody else. And I can tell you right now, George Bush isn't working for $400,000 a year as president of the United States. I remember old Hillary Clinton, you know, she was a first lady. You know, her last year at the Rose Law Firm, down, you know, she worked in Little Rock, Arkansas for this law firm. Last year she worked for him before they took the president job, you know, and went to Washington. She made $527,000. You know how much Bill Clinton made as governor of Arkansas? I think his biggest year was 50 grand. Hell, I know truck drivers that make more money than that, for crying out loud. People don't take jobs like governor of Arkansas for $50,000 a year. Let's grow up and get real, boys and girls. Hillary Clinton didn't become First Lady of the United States so that she could give up $500,000 a year. You take on those jobs because it connects you with the right people in the right places so that you can make big money later on. Now, our senators and representatives, you know, are all for sale. They go to Washington, and they've probably got high hopes. I remember we had a senator by the name of Steve Sims out in Idaho. Hell of a nice guy. He's an apple grower. Honest, you know, hardworking guy. And then we had the senator out there, Frank Church. You know, he was a New Age socialist, you know, from the ranks of the communists. And so we somehow or another, a miracle happened. You know, just tell me that God doesn't love Idahoans. And so he got rid of Frank Church and put Steve Sims in. I'm telling you, boys and girls, it wasn't 4 years. I don't think it was 2 years until you couldn't tell the difference between a Steve Sims vote and a Frank Church vote, which just demonstrates my philosophy that, and this old adage, you know, that you can put good apples into a barrel of rotten apples. Do you think that you're going to make the rotten apples good by putting good apples in a barrel of rotten apples? No, but one rotten apple will make a whole barrel of good apples go bad. That's why I kind of laugh, you know, people want to reform the Congress. I mean, come on, kids, you want to reform public education? Okay, it's time to wake up and smell the coffee, I would say. Now, a guy by the name of Hoover, remember that name, Hoover? He used to run the FBI, not the guy that was president of the United States. This guy's J. Edgar. See, Herbert Hoover was president. J. Edgar Hoover, he was the head of the FBI. He was a queer. He was a sodomite, and he collected information on people. He was not an advocate of privacy. He was an advocate of finding out about other people, and he kept long dossiers on people, and then he would blackmail them, particularly senators and representatives. When he was appointed, it was old Calvin Coolidge that appointed him back in 1924, and he was the head of the FBI until he died about 1900. Early 70s sometime, you know, he died in office. Now, since then, we've had more FBI directors than presidents, but you know, when Hoover was in, by God, nobody got rid of Hoover, because if the president said, well, I'm going to change this guy, Herbert Hoover, Hoover would come in and say, well, listen, this is the file that we've got on you, boss, and I don't think that changing horses in the middle of the stream is a good idea, and so that president, he would recommend that Hoover stay on. So Hoover was a master of getting information, getting the goods on people. Well, senators and representatives, you know, vote the way they vote because somebody somewhere has the goods on them. That's what the bottom line is. Now, the interaction between the separate data banks of government and business heightens the potential for abuse. Now, it used to be that the government had data on us, and then it used to be that business had data on us, and this data was separated, and you couldn't put it together. Even even J. Edgar Hoover, he couldn't put all this information about your medical records and about your financial records and about your political records and all of these various and sundry records together. Didn't have the computer technology. Today they do. And in spite of that, I say, I don't see any problem with maintaining your public persona and your private persona. You know, I'm a pretty private guy. And other than what I tell you, and other than what you can find out from information that's already out there in the public arena, you know, you don't know much about me, and I'm not telling. And the government is constantly trying to find out. I mean, the government wants to know more and more and more about you and about me because they want to control us. That's the purpose for all of this information, is control. And J. Edgar Hoover could control most of the members of Congress. He could control the President of the United States with the information that he had about these people and their personal lives. Now, you know, if we would obey God, keep His commandments, and practice the Ten Commandments, there wouldn't be very much about your personal private life that would be worth knowing. What are you going to say about a guy like Elijah? You know, he was out shacking up with Rufy or Sandy or Janie or somebody. No, he didn't practice adultery. Bill Clinton, now, he had a little problem with Jamie and Janie. And, of course, then some smart guy, you know, like J. Edgar Hoover come along. Wasn't Hoover in Clinton's case, but, you know, some smart guy comes along, and he collects that information. Then he can go to the president and say, by the way, Mr. President, we wouldn't want these pictures to get out into public, you know, would we? And the president say, well, very wise of you, Bob, very wise of you. And I think I'll appoint you as ambassador to Great Britain, or I think I'll appoint you to be a special envoy to, you know, that's what this political crap is all about. Bottom line, that's what that's all about. Now, business has a legitimate reason for collecting this information about you, because they want to sell you a snowmobile or a Harley Davidson. They want to sell you a new Chevrolet. So they want this information. So they go to government And they say, listen, we want you to send out this census. And in the census, we want you to ask people how many bathrooms they've got, because a certain number of people are going to answer that question. And here's the way this game is played. You don't ask everybody in America what TV station you were watching last night or what TV show you were watching. They don't need everybody in the country. They just need a representative proportion. And that'll tell them what kind of drugs you use, or, you know, what TV show you watch, or how you're going to vote in the next election. These are called public opinion polls. So the census people, who are charged under our Constitution with counting people for the purposes of voting, are now sending you out questionnaires and asking you questions like, what kind of a car do you drive? How many gallons of gasoline does it burn? And how many miles do you commute to work? Which has absolutely nothing to do with any legitimate purpose that was set out by our founding fathers in the census. But it makes all the sense in the world for business and government to team up together to collect information on Americans. Well, hell for you Australians and New Zealanders and Frenchmen and Italians, it makes all the sense in the world. That way your government can better control you. They can pander to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. They can promise you what they know they can't deliver, and then tax you to get the means whereby they can appear to be trying to deliver what they know they can't deliver. It keeps them elected to office, which after all is every politician's dream, is getting reelected in the next election. And so this information is not for naught. You know, it's there for a reason, and we want more and more and more of it, because the more information we have, the better we can control you. The better we can appeal to your vanity, your jealousy, your lust, your base senses. The better we can appeal to you and sell you what it is we want to sell. So I mentioned to you that the government, that is your federal government, keeps 15 files on every American. Hell, boys and girls, that was back in 1982. God knows how many files they keep on you today. Maybe it's 30. I don't know. Now, I mentioned to you the Denny's waitress test. So I've got a little formula that I use when somebody asks me questions or they talk to me. I went out to dinner last night with some students. I'm teaching class this week. And so we have some students here in school. So we went over to Ryan's and we're sitting there and we're talking and one thing and another. And people are curious. And it's natural for people to be curious. And so they ask me some pretty personal questions. Shucks, sometimes I even answer some pretty personal questions. But oftentimes we will get somebody and he gets to be, you know, just a little bit too personal, just a little bit too familiar. And so I mentioned this to you last time. I try to steer the conversation away. I try to be polite, you know, try to be friendly and outgoing, and I don't want to be rude and obnoxious and so on. And so I kind of steer it away. Well, oftentimes, I don't know if it's often, but sometimes there are people that come in here from the government. Well, I think they're from the government because they're kind of asking me kind of real personal questions. Well, one time we had a guy come in here and he said, where do you hide your ammunition and your guns? You know, somebody says to me, where do you hide your ammunition and guns? The red flag comes up and I go, huh? What the hell has this got to do with the price of putty? And so, you know, you try to steer the conversation onto something else and, you know, kind of ignore this guy. You know, he might as well be asking you something personal about your sex life, you know. You know, you don't want to be too rude. But anyway, I steered the conversation off and then pretty soon he comes right back to it again. He says, you know, you can put your ammunition into a plastic pipe and put caps on it and bury it. Is that what you do? You know, right away I could see this guy's about as phony as a $3 Fed note, you know. I thought, well, I said, no, I think you misunderstand. See that plastic pipe? That's a sewer pipe, that 4-inch sewer pipe that you're talking about. That's for moving sewage from your toilet out to the septic tank. Now, that should be a pretty good, pretty strong signal, you know, to some guy that, you know, you're starting to ask questions over here that you probably ought not to be asking. Who told you I had a gun? Why do I need to hide guns and ammunition in sewer pipe and bury them in the backyard? What the hell is the matter with this guy? Why do I have to do that? Well, what he's angling for is, Mr. Gordon, I think you've got some illegal guns. You must have some assault weapons or something that's really pretty clandestine, you know. Well, if I did, I wouldn't admit it. For crying out loud, let's grow up and get real. Now, my old daddy, you know, he was a pretty avid sportsman, a pretty avid hunter, you know, and one thing and another. And when I was a kid, I said to my daddy, I said, Dad, how come we don't have some pistols? And my dad said, well, pistols, son, handguns, are only made for killing people. And we don't have any use for handguns. My dad was an old Army guy, you know. I imagine he must have had an old Army 45, you know, when he was in the military. But he didn't have any need for a pistol. And he said to me one time, he said, son, do you think that a pistol will kill a man any better than a 30-30 rifle? I didn't know. What does an 11-year-old kid know? So I said, I don't know. He said, it won't. He said, in fact, that short barrel on there is an impediment. He said, that long barrel gives you greater accuracy. You can kill people at a longer distance with a rifle than you can with a pistol. A pistol is for short, close-range killing. And the only purpose for killing is to kill people with a pistol. That's why policemen carry pistols. It's for killing people. They're not interested. You know, that cop, you know, carrying that shotgun, you know, in his patrol car, he's not interested in shooting doves or quail or turkeys or something. He's interested in killing people. That's a short range, close in weapon. They call them alley cleaners. Well, anyway, this guy, he kept pushing and he kept pushing, you know, and pretty soon I had to get kind of rude with the guy and tell him, you know, it's none of your damn business. And if it was, I'd tell you. Well, then he was kind of offended and he went off and he went down to some other patriot group somewhere. I don't know exactly where it was. I think it was the Arkansas Times or something like that. And he infiltrated their organization and he broke it up. That's why I found out later on he was a government agent. But you see, these people, they come around, they ask these personal questions. They're not interested in truth or honesty or righteousness or goodness or anything like that. They're interested in gathering evidence against you to put you in prison. That's what government agents are for. That's what J. Edgar Hoover was for. He wasn't the head of the FBI because he was a nice guy. And he was a rabid anti-communist, and so he used his office as head of the FBI to put people in prison, to break up political organizations, and to raise hell and discontent. Nothing more, nothing less. So the government, you know, when they come to you and say, well, we're just here to protect and serve, you know, that's a lie. Well, it's not a total lie. They are there to protect and serve, but not you. They're there to protect and serve themselves and their constituents. And their constituents aren't you, the voters. It's Pfizer and General Motors and IBM. Circle K, Sears Roebuck. They're there to protect trade, commerce, business, and industry, and to make money, and at your expense. And so by collecting information on Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife helps them in their overall objective, and that's to subjugate people. Now, in Germany, they call that Nazism, and they call it they call it tyranny and dictatorship. What the hell difference does it make if you vote for a dictator? Didn't everybody vote for Joe Stalin? Didn't everybody vote for Adolf Hitler? Didn't everybody vote for George Bush? I mean, come on, kids. Voting is just a methodology whereby you can invite tyranny because you really like it. It's not being imposed upon you. Hell, you voted for it. You asked for it. You wanted it. You wrote letters to your representative and said, we demand it. And so your representatives are trying to give you this national identification card. They want to identify every American. And so when the deal comes down, what will happen is without your national ID card, you won't be able to board an airplane. Hell, I'm there already. I can't get on an airplane. I don't have any national ID. I don't have any picture identification. Do you know that? Think about it. I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a social security number. I don't have any picture ID. I don't need any. And the reason I don't need any is because I know who I am. I don't have amnesia. I've had policemen come up and say, well, I want to see your identification. I said, well, what was it exactly that you wanted to identify? He says, I want to identify you. I said, well, let me help you. My name is George Gordon. Now I've identified myself. Yeah, but I got to have some official ID. Okay, well, what do you call official ID? I got to have a driver's license. I said, I don't drive. Amish people don't drive. They don't have driver's licenses. How do you identify an Amish man? You ask him, well, what's your name, sir? And he says, my name is Jonas Yoder. Do you have any official ID? No. Don't you have a social security number? No. We don't participate in social security. Well, you know, and then they kind of look at you like, well, I've got identification. I've got official identification. I've got a driver's license. I've got a social security number. I've got a business license, a marriage license, and 15 other documents issued by government that identifies me. Of course, it identifies you as a chattel property of some government or government agent. And identification is very important for people that have amnesia or Alzheimer's disease. You know, you picture it, makes all the sense in the world. You're walking down the street. And you say, oh my God, I can't remember who I am. Who am I? And then you start feeling around, and nope, that was my cigarettes up in my shirt pocket. And you reach around, oh, there's a lump on my hip. Oh, I've got a wallet. Let me open this wallet and see whose it belongs to. And you look, open it up, and oh my God, it's George Gordon. Now I remember who I am. Here's my official identification. I haven't needed any of that yet, so I don't carry any identification. So now they came up with a new rule. Says if you don't have state-issued identification, you can't get on an airplane. Okay, so I can't ride airplanes anymore. Didn't hurt me any. I still travel. I just don't travel by airplane. Well, hell, George Washington never traveled by airplane, and neither did Abraham Lincoln, and they got around pretty well, didn't they? So airplanes are kind of neat, and they're kind of convenient, but they're not absolutely necessary. Then somebody woke up one day and said, oh, my God, that Gordon's going to bomb the Greyhound bus. So we got to have picture ID to get on a Greyhound bus, so that precludes me from Greyhound, because I can't ride the bus anymore. And then somebody told me the other day, you got to have identification to get on an Amtrak train. Well, okay, so I guess I can't travel on Amtrak, can't travel on Greyhound, can't travel on United. That's a control mechanism, boys and girls. That's to keep me locked up in Isabella, Missouri. Got that? That's the way that game's played. And so they want to control me, and so they put these limitations out there. And so most people, they don't want to be limited. And so they'll go down and get their identification. And so then that gives the government the opportunity to identify and control these people. That's what that's all about. And they're talking about a national identification card here, you know, and you won't be able to get into a courthouse without one. You won't be able to get services. One of these days, you won't be able to go into a Walmart store. Did you know that? I'm not kidding you. It's right here in Bible prophecy. I got to tell you this little story. Back in the 30s, when Franklin Roosevelt came up with this real nifty idea, it's called Social Security. Yeah, that was Franklin Roosevelt. He had this great idea. And he sold it as national retirement. It's actually national identification is what it is. I used to have one of those Social Security numbers, and then I woke up one day and I got rid of it, rescinded it. They sent him a notice and I said, hey, listen, take me out of the program, would you? I'm an old man and I can't draw Social Security because I don't have a Social Security number. And the Supreme Court said, hey, listen, Gordon, if you want Social Security, it's called Bowen versus Roy. It said, hey, if you want Social Security, you want to get the money back that you paid in? Hey, listen, you get your Social Security number and come on down here and sign up. Get in line like everybody else. I remember they used to do that when I was a little kid in public school. They teach you how to get in the line. Remember that? You stand in line to go in from recess. You stand in line so that you can go out to recess. You stand in line so that you can get your lunch. You stand in line. They teach you. In public school, they teach you to be subservient. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. You know, it fits you into trade, commerce, business, and industry. It fits you into the military. They train you to be subservient. They train you to be a bondservant for government. I woke up one day and I said, I don't like this bondservant statute over here. Well, anyway, in Revelation 13, might flip over there. In Revelation 13, verse 15, he starts off. He says, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause, that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So if you're not going to worship government, they're going to kill you. And in verse 16, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. Hey, listen, you take a look at Social Security here in the United States. George Bush has a Social Security number. He's great. Donald Trump has a Social Security number, and he's rich. And then Shirley, the cleaning lady down the street over here, she's poor and she has a Social Security number. Yes, sir, boys and girls. And I'll bet you people down in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and France and Denmark and Russia, you've all got Social Security numbers too. You may not call it Social Security. Maybe it's your national health care card, or maybe it's your national this or that, or national identification card, or whatever. But your government has you marked, and that's your mark of the beast. And they're coming up with a new, they'll have a worldwide mark of the beast. This is identification now, isn't it? And we want to identify you people. We want to identify you people so that you fit into the new world order. In verse 17, it's for this purpose, that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. You're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade without it. So I said, you won't be able to go into a Walmart store. So you people in the city, you know, as the old saying goes, they're just plain screwed, aren't you? You're not going to be able to buy. You won't be able to go down to the hardware store and get anything. Can't get any food. Can't buy any clothes without your mark of the beast. Now that's the ultimate in control. That's the ultimate. That's where they're headed. That's where they're going. That's where they want you. Now, privacy, on the other hand, is a gift that comes from God. It comes from thou shalt not steal. And you take a look at the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal is the basis of property and property rights. And privacy is incident to property. You want privacy, you have to have property. And the first plank of the Communist Manifesto takes away all of your property. In fact, it calls for the abolition of all right to property. Your founding fathers in the Constitution guaranteed you the right to property. And communism and the communist philosophy wants to take it away from you. Moses gave you property, and government takes it away. I can't for the life of me understand why it is that Americans support socialism, Republicans, Democrats, communists, public school, insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, drug makers, but they do, and they love it. Far be it from me to get in the way of the happiness and success of Americans, or you Australians, or Canadians, or anybody else. But I just thought I would share with you that, you know, if this thing runs its course, which it ultimately will, God said it's going to run its course, and if you participate in it, God says, I'm going to kill you. And the state says, if you don't participate in it, you're going to starve to death. So while you're mulling over, did you want to get killed or starve to death, let me give you this reminder. And that reminder is, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. And The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, just like you, but by prearrangement, and that's because it's private. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact discs. If you'd like more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour or editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Let's see if we can get rid of that static. Hang on. There, that sounds a little better. That phone number again, 417-273-4967. Now, we're talking about privacy and privacy issues. The Supreme Court of the United States has a lot to say about privacy and privacy issues, and there's been a number of cases that have been decided on the search and seizure side of privacy, such as Weeks versus U.S., Carroll, Boyd, Silverthorne, Almeida Sanchez. That Almeida Sanchez, now that's a funny story. I'll tell you that story probably next time. Delaware versus Prowse, that's a neat story. Somerville versus California, that's kind of a sad one, but then, you know, you got to face reality from time to time. And we're not opposed to identification. You know, I'm not hiding anything from you. My name is George Gordon. Let me introduce myself. And I'm the host of the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So, you know, I've got a public side. So if you're a government worker and say, hey, there's something wrong with this guy Gordon, he's trying to hide his identity. No. Pretty upfront with my identity. I don't give out my fingerprints to just anybody. You have to be pretty special, you know, for me to give you my fingerprints. But it isn't that government doesn't have my fingerprints or that I'm hiding from somebody or that I've got some sordid past over here, although I'm sure a lot of policemen are out there rummaging around through dusty files trying to find something that I've done that I'm really ashamed of which there's quite a few, but I'm not talking about those. All right, now notice that in the scripture here, God himself says that we've got this problem called the mark of the beast, and I think that Social Security is the mark of the beast, and if it isn't, it's a close kiss and cousin for what's coming down. So I try to avoid contact with government. I that's why I don't want a driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate. I don't want business licenses and so on. And the reason for that is because they're strictly prohibited in the scripture. There's four statutes in the scripture. God told us four times. He says, don't make any treaties, don't make any covenants, don't make any contracts with these foreign and alien gods. That's what government is. It's a god. It's a violation of the first commandment that says you shall have no other gods before me. And that's because governments are sovereign entities. They make law. And God says you're not to add to this law or take away from it. Now, the only purpose for the United States Congress is to alter, reform, or amend the law of God. They don't exist for any other purpose. And that's because God gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and then gave us two statutes and says, don't add to this, don't take away from it. You'll see that in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. It's against the law to amend the law of God. It's against the law to add to it, subtract from it, or dink around with it. In fact, Jesus said, not one jot or tittle shall in any wise pass from the law until all be fulfilled. So he came and showed us how to practice this law. A lot of times people say, well, you can't practice this law of God. They write me kind of snotty letters. And so you can't do that. Well, I can speak for yourself, son. In fact, I was having class yesterday, and I brought this subject up. And one of the statutes in the Bible requires that you post the Ten Commandments on your gates and on your doorposts. And I asked the students, and I said, is there any of you people in here that have a physical impediment that would preclude you from posting the Ten Commandments on your gates or your doorposts? Nobody raised their hands. Of course, they all had hands and feet. And we didn't have any mental retards in there, so I suppose that they had the mental capacity to drive four nails into the four corners of a placard and nail it on their gate. So I guess that was the bottom line to that. Now, there's two statutes in the Bible that tell you to do that. Now, I can do that. And I did do it. And that's one law out of 133. Out of 759 statutes, there's two statutes that cover that one subject. There's 133 subjects of law in the Bible. And I know all 133 of them. And I know all 26 or 28 penalties for the violation of them. And I'm not physically handicapped. And I can perform on that law. And I did. And I nailed the Ten Commandments up on my gate. So now I got 132 more laws. I figured that if I could do one of those laws, I might be able to do two, maybe four, maybe even eight if I stretched it real hard. And I've analyzed all 133 of these laws that God gave us through Moses at Mount Sinai, and I can't find a single one of them over there that's impossible. In fact, I can't even find a single one of them that isn't even desirable. In fact, you know the law that says thou shalt not steal? I think that's a very desirable law. I don't want you to steal from me, partner. And I'll just bet you that you don't want me stealing from you. So I think you and I could probably agree that thou shalt not steal is a pretty desirable law. Hell, even a drug dealer doesn't want you stealing from him. That's why they get so mean and nasty. my brother, who was a drug dealer, you know, he's probably passed on. I haven't heard from him for a long time now, but anyway, he was in the drug business. He said, hey, there's no problem with drugs as long as you pay your supplier. He said, the problem comes is when the supplier delivers you the drugs and then you don't pay him. That's when hard feelings come up. So when you steal your drug dealer, or when you steal from your drug dealer, it makes him upset and gets him real mean. He can't report you to the Better Business Bureau. He can't turn in a police report. He can't complain about you and sue you for non-payment of your cocaine bill. So the only solution is he's got to go out and become a vigilante and kill you. Hell, even drug dealers don't like thieves. So, you know, it's a pretty desirable law. Hell, even drug dealers like the law that says thou shalt not steal. Now, I mentioned to you the other day that your government out here maintains these 15 files on each American. Well, listen, New York State's got 1,776, 20 years ago or 25 years ago now, 1,776 separate data systems. Hey, wait, do you think that Idaho has less than 1,776 separate data systems? Did you think that California has something less than 1,776 separate data systems? Boys and girls, do you know how many 1,776 is? Well, just start counting right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and you count up to 1,776. I'll bet you it takes you an hour to count to 1,776. And that's the data systems that they have that collect 1,776 different data. I mean, you got a driver's license operation there. That's one data system. And then they got a food stamp thingy. And then that's another data system. And I'll bet you they got a data system that keeps track of how many New Yorkers comb their hair or part their hair on the left side and how many part their hair on the right side and how many people comb their hair straight back. I cannot even imagine 1,776 things that you could know about me. I can't even write down 1,776. My God, the creator of the universe runs the whole damn universe on 759 laws, and the state of New York has got 1,776 separate data systems just to keep track of useless facts. That's the bright spot about this thing of privacy. Most of the crap that they're collecting doesn't mean anything anyway. Most of it. But there is a couple things over here that could get to be kind of important. So let's take a look at privacy in the electronic age. In the last few years, the average citizen, particularly if he regularly uses the internet, whether it be for online shopping or email, you've probably discovered something that others have known for many years. Privacy in the United States, while not entirely a thing of the past, has been severely compromised. Especially here in the age of interlinked computers, each with significant amounts of personal data on them. I'm going to underline the words personal data. Personal data. I think computers are really great. You know, we've got one here, and we think it's a pretty neat invention. And it collects a lot of personal data. And I think that my first point should be personal data. What is it about you personally that you do not want people to know about? You know, think about it. Do you want people to know, you know, the length of your hair? Well, it's no real big secret, you know, but, you know, maybe your hair length over here might be kind of important. Because, you know, if your hair length is 6, 8, 10 inches, it kind of, and if you're a boy, I mean, you're talking about males, it kind of identifies you as a drug user. Did you know that? I was talking to a policeman here not too long ago. He says, hell, all these boys, all these men are wearing earrings in their ears and long hair, they're drugs, druggies. And that long hair identifies you to all the other druggies out there as being a druggie. I didn't know that. And then if you wear your earring in your right ear or left ear, I don't know which one it is, it signals to everybody else that you're gay. And then if you've got two earrings, I mean, if you're a man and you've got an earring in each ear, that signals something else. I'm not quite sure what it does. In the Bible, if you're wearing earrings in your ear, it identifies you as a bondservant. It's really a shame for a man to have long hair, and it's really a shame for a man to have holes in his ears. It's a glory for a woman to have long hair, and it's natural and normal for a woman to have holes bored in her ears, especially if she's married, which used to be the old Hebrew custom. You see, you bored holes in a female's ears because that's what you bore a hole in as a bondservant. And so when a woman was married, she became a bondservant to her husband and then bored a hole in her ear. And then it sent a signal to all the rest of the studs in the community. Yeah, that one's taken. That woman's married. Today you got little girls, you know, that are 2 or 3 years old and they poke holes in their ears and stick earrings in. I think it's for decoration. I kind of figured that little girl 2 or 3 years old probably wasn't married, but, you know, why poke holes in a little girl's ear until she actually is married? Because it sends a signal. It's supposed to send a signal to the rest of the men in the community, you know, keep your hands off. Belongs to somebody else. Thou shalt not steal. Anyway, you got this personal data. Personal data. Well, there's a certain amount of personal data that I kind of like to keep personal. So I underlined that, and then I drew up a list, and I said, well, what are some of the things that are personal that I want to keep track of that I don't want to reveal to other people? Well, the Fourth Amendment to our Constitution protects your person, houses, papers, and effects. So you start there with persons, houses, papers, and effects. And did you know that your name is kind of personal? Do you know that? Not everybody is entitled to know what your name is. Now, an old common law rule for us Anglo-Saxons over here is that a free man is who he says he is. Now, a bondservant isn't. So in America today, for instance, if you want to change your name, you have to go to your master, the state, and get a legal change of name with permission of your master, the state of New York or the state of California. Two states in the Union, Idaho and Mississippi, still practice the old common law rule that a free man is who he says he is, a free man. Now, if you're a soldier in the Army and your name is, Doug Johnson, and you wake up one day and you say, I don't like the name Douglas Johnson, and I want to change my name to Tom Cruise. You can't do that. You got to have permission from your commanding officer, and you have permission from your master. And that's because you're a bondservant. You signed an enlistment contract. You people with social security numbers have signed an enlistment contract, and you can't change your name without permission from your master. Now, I'm pretty satisfied with my name. I didn't have any real input into selecting my name, but I kind of got used to it, and I'm kind of used to answering to the name George, and besides that, George Washington, he was pretty famous, and so I figured, well, if George Washington didn't complain much about his name, and then there's George Bush, he hasn't been complaining about his name, so I thought, hell, George is probably as good a name as any. Tom's pretty fair, Sam, I kind of like Sam, too. So I thought, well, shucks, I'll just keep my name George Gordon, and I don't mind you knowing that my name is George Gordon. But that's my public persona. Now, my real name is Sam Smedley. And that's my private name. I keep Sam Smedley. And then there's IP Daily and Harry Wolf. Let me ask you a question. If my name was Harry Wolf, would that be offensive to you? I mean, if I came on the air and I said, well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. I'm your host, Harry Wolf. Would that bother you? What if my name was IP Daily? Would that be offensive? Would Sam Jones or George Gordon? A name, if you get right down on the bottom line, is really kind of irrelevant. Well, I don't know, your government, they seem to think that it's pretty relevant because there's three things they're looking for. They want to know your name, your birth date, and your social security number. Did you ever notice that? First thing the policeman asks you is what's your name, birthday, and social security number. Well, my name is personal, my birth date is a practice of witchcraft, and social security is my number from my master in a guardian ward relationship. It's the mark of the beast. Two out of those three are against the law. They violate the law of God. And you've been taught and trained from the time you were a little kid, 1 year old. You reached a year, and your mama had a birthday party. Well, it's natural. Your mama's got a birthday, your daddy's got a birthday, and they were taught from the time they were little children to practice their birthdays, and they got that from their mommies and daddies, who were taught to practice their birthdays, and they learned that from their mommies and daddies. So did you ever look back in the Bible and find out where birthdays came from? Yeah, you guessed it. Paganism came from the Babylonians and the Assyrians. It's a pagan practice. Jesus never practiced his birthday. There isn't anybody in the Bible that practiced their birthday. Well, there weren't any good guys in the Bible. There's two birthdays mentioned in the Bible, and there's a guy by the name of Herod. He was the guy that was running around killing all the little babies. Remember? He wasn't really a good guy. And on his birthday, he killed John the Baptist. That's right. And he killed John the Baptist on his birthday. He had a big birthday party, and he asked his stepdaughter what she wanted for a present. And she said, the head of John the Baptist, and he said, it's yours. And the other one was Pharaoh, and he lifted the head off of his butler. Or his baker, I forget which one it was. I guess it was baker, I guess. We don't know Jesus' birthdays. There's nobody else in the Bible that practiced birthdays. In fact, in the scripture it says, better is the day of one's death than his birth, and at Passover we celebrate the death of the Messiah. We do not celebrate his birth on Christmas. I just thought I'd share that with you. And then there's Social Security over here, of course. The Mark of the Beast, I showed you that one in Revelation 13. And what is it your government taught you? They taught you your name, birth date, and Social Security number, and they lock you into your name. There was a time in America, if you didn't like your name George Gordon, you could just change your name to Sam Smedley. Not anymore. Not anymore. Well, except in Idaho and Mississippi. Now, the only way to completely prevent this electronic intrusion into your life is to be a literal hermit, having nothing to do with credit cards, debit cards, mortgages, banks, and the phone company, online computing. Now, most individuals don't want to go that far, but they still want for some guidelines as to how to minimize the impact of all of this electronic intrusion. And by setting forth some basic rules the police and others follow in their practice of identifying us, as well as steps that can be taken to prevent other forms of intrusion, we hope to allow you to redeem and or to retain some portion of your privacy. Now, I don't know what it is that you want to keep personal and private, but that's a decision for you to make. If you want to keep your name personal and private, then you probably ought to change it. Now, many people want to keep their phone numbers personal and private, so they have unlisted phone numbers. I'm one of those kind of guys. I'm kind of personal and private. Now, there's a number of people that are my close friends, and I'm sure that George Bush, the President of the United States, has some close friends. Now, if George Bush had a listed phone number, and anybody in America could call George Bush anytime, night or day, boy, he would spend 24 hours a day answering the telephone. So would Tom Cruise. So the people have to have a methodology whereby they can filter out. And so, most people, if you've got the means, you have a secretary, and the secretary filters out your phone calls. or you have an unlisted number, or you have more than one telephone. See, and that's the way we do it here at the law school. You may have more than one telephone. And so there's certain people that I give my telephone number to, and they can call me anytime. Those are my buddies. Those are my friends. So if you've got my telephone number, then you must be one of my buddies. Otherwise, you know, this telephone rings here 30, 40 times a day. Well, I can't sit here telephone, you know, and answer the phone 40 times a day. Come on, let's grow up and get real. So we have to have a methodology whereby we can sort out what it is we want to listen to, what it is that we want to make public. And so you need to write this down on a piece of paper. I'm going to give you some ideas. I'm about out of time here today, but we'll start off here in the morning, or tomorrow night rather. We'll start off and we'll take a look at police identification. What is it that the policeman wants to do to identify you? And I'll show you what it is. There's 63 things here that the policeman needs to know. And then we'll go through and we'll take this up to the end, of which there are how many are in here? 92. 92 things that you may want to keep personal and private, that you may not want other people to know. Some of those things you cannot keep personal and private. You know, like I mentioned to you last time, my school records at Ferndale High School, I can never make those personal or private. Those are public documents. Anybody can get those. So there's some things that there's just nothing in the world that you're going to do that's going to make you personal and private. But as I just mentioned, you can make your telephone number personal and private. You don't know my telephone number and you can't call me. See that? All right. Now, if I can do it, you can do it. If George Bush can do it, so can you. Now, my chief of police has a public telephone number, and when I want to call my chief of police or my sheriff, I go to the blue pages in the telephone book, and I can get the sheriff. But I can't call him at home, and I'm not one of his buddies, and I don't have his private phone number. And he's got a certain amount of privacy that is attached to his telephone. If my sheriff can have it, and I can have it, and Tom Cruise and George Bush, then you can have it also. So we'll start off there with the telephone. Hey, you can have a private telephone. Nobody knows anything about it but you. That's one. And we'll start right there next time. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. Now, for more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Okay, we're out of time. We're going to leave it right there. We'll see you back in tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.